This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. It's our Health and Living segment. We're discussing today's topic about how do we better protect older adults. Malaysia is an aging nation, which means that by the year 2030, 15% of our population will be above the age of 65. Will they be healthy and fit, or will they be burdened by disease? Or do we know what kind of health risk they have, and you know, how to actually protect them? What can we learn from COVID-19, the pandemic, where the older adults have been most vulnerable? Well, we're going to be finding out from Professor Zamri Sakawi. He's the chairman of the Malaysian Influenza Working Group and professor in medical microbiology, University Putra, Malaysia. Also joining us, Dr. Noura Nakia Hairi. She's a professor of epidemiology and public health at University of Malaya. This conversation is brought to you by Immunize for Life with their campaign, Flu Prevention is an Act of Love, which has this theme, come out stronger, protect them better. Welcome to the show. How are the both of you today?
Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, we're fine.
You're most welcome. I mean, Dr. Noura, I'm going to start with you, actually. People like you have come to the forefront since the pandemic. The epidemiologist, the public health expert. How have the last many months been for you?
I think the last many months have been busy for all of us. Looking at the numbers, monitoring the numbers, and trying to help as best as we can in all ways that we can. So it has been difficult. It has been tough, but I hope we can breathe through the times that we are right now. This very unprecedented. None of us have thought that our world was gonna be like this. I mean, at the end of 2019, we were all happy, end of the year holiday, and suddenly in 2020, things just took a 360 degrees turn. So it has been challenging, I must say.
How do you think the older person has coped with this situation?
I guess when I talked about older person, they are, one of the things that we have to remember is that our older population or older people, they are not a homogeneous group, right? So they are actually, what I can say is that they are a group of people with different needs and different health status, as well as different they're not homogeneous. They're very heterogeneous. So some are really very, very healthy. And some, of course, who are in the vulnerable age group or vulnerable categories, so those need a bit more help. But generally, one of the things that we talk, whenever we talk about older people, is they're not homogeneous. That's something that we really need to remember. They're no typical older person. So some 90-year-olds actually have the physical and mental capacity similar to 20 and a 30. So yes. I really love those group of people. While others actually have experienced some significant declines in the physical and mental capacities as they grow older. So there is a lot of diversity you see in older age group. And these are not random, actually, when you talk about this diversity. There are some patterns, right? Some are actually due to biological or behavioral reasons, but a large part of it is actually due to the environmental or in fact, their behavioral per se. So it's not so much of genetic or biology. So these are some of the things that I think it's useful for us to look into to find out what are these patterns so that the older people can actually, you know, live healthy and have a better quality of life.
Okay. We're discussing, as Malaysia ages, how do we protect older adults? If you have a question for us, you can give us a call. It's 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Prof. Zamri, what have been your observations? I mean, you're chairman of the Malaysian Influenza Working Group. Are older people in general open to vaccinations? And that's, you know, a big thing now, right? My goodness, the WhatsApp messages that they receive is an entirely different world altogether. And there was a lot of hesitancy, especially when we launched all of this. We rolled out in March. We seem to see more and more older people now getting vaccinated. But what have been your observations in the past?
Yeah, thank you, Mira. Thank you again for having us here. Talking about older persons, in the past, it seems that we have been, it's quite a challenge to actually advocate a vaccination for these older persons to protect themselves against dangerous infectious diseases. For example, we are advocates of flu. Flu is something that is really a serious disease for older persons because it can get give us a lot of severe infections and as well as death. And also, not to forget meningococcal and pneumococcal among these particular groups. So it's really a challenge to convince the older persons as well as their children to get their parents to come and get vaccinated. And so much so that that's why we have this Immunos for Life campaign and all this. We have it every year. And fortunately, I say we can see that there's also a blessing with this kind of pandemic. I mean, there is some positive aspect of it that we see a lot of awareness now with regard to immunization, well, specifically for COVID vaccines. But in general, the people are starting to realize that there is a role of vaccines in preventing dangerous infections, as well as like we mentioned COVID and all these things. From that awareness also comes like a lot of fake news being spreading around. So that again is a big thing. I've been very busy addressing all this news, try to keep myself updated as well.
All the conspiracy theories.
Yes, the pandemic has been very, very dynamic. You know, what you know today may not be true tomorrow. So I've been, reading all the publications, all whatever the experts are saying and experience of other countries.
Okay. You know, for us in this part of the world, at least, filial piety is very big, right? Our parents, we value, we respect the older person very much. I'm not saying that, you know, the rest of the world doesn't, but it's a little, you know, it's very deep rooted in Asia when it comes to filial piety. How do you think that has translated into their health and well-being? Dr. Noran, are their health needs prioritized? Are we actually an ageist society at the same time where that treats older people as being helpless? You know, when do you see that changing? And what do you think that's going to look like in the future?
Yeah, thanks. I think, Malaysian culture or our Asian culture teaches young people to be courteous and respect elders. We also focus on relationship. Filial piety is one of it. And then there is also this thing of mengenang budi, right? Budi is also something that we value very much. Harmony, saving face is another one that we have in our society. And I think whether our society is an ageist society that treats older people as helpless, I think in general our society cares a lot for the elders, and we try our level best to ensure that they have a better quality of life. I suppose when you talk about ages or ageism or age-related discrimination or stigmatization of older people, these ideas actually hurts. It's an idea that the society puts the artificial barrier, and when people start to believe in it, it does hurt. It does, all these outdated beliefs actually does harm the older people, and perceiving that older people are relatively helpless or dependents requiring services, it rather difficult. And I think we have to change this perception. But when it comes to medical or health, in terms of health, I think when you talk about manifestation of ageism, it's thinks that whether older people are being underdiagnosed when it comes to diseases or over medicated or under medicated when it comes to certain conditions, or even having this DNR or do not resuscitate issue when it comes to hospitalization, or in fact be excluded from decisions made about their own healthcare. And I don't think that's what's happening in Malaysia right now. Like I said, I think in general our society cares a lot for older people, and it's part, like I said, it's part of the filial piety that we have in society or in our Asian or Eastern culture. But nevertheless, there are things that we should do better, we can do better. There are issues or places that we can improve. And my feeling is that most of our beliefs on aging have somehow remained the same, yet our world is changing.
Yeah.
Right. So it's time to actually change the stories or change the stories that we tell ourselves when it comes to aging, right? We kind of need to change the conversation on aging. We need to challenge our outdated beliefs and encourage us to rethink these negative stories. And it's not just society. Sometimes it's our own individual self. We feel that as we grow older, we can't do this anymore. We can't do that anymore. So it starts from within. I think it starts from ourselves. We need to live, because if you think about it, we'll be living more in the adulthood rather than in childhood. Things have changed, the world have changed. Initially, we were living more in our childhood years, but now we'll be moving towards adulthood more. So it's time that we ourselves start thinking differently.
But would you not say that, you know, this pandemic has shown that they are the most vulnerable in a health crisis? What do you think it's taught us about the value of putting their needs first? I mean, we had geriatrician Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin on the shows very earlier on when we started to roll out the vaccinations. And she pointed out that the older people should be first, even before the frontliners, that they should be vaccinated first, because they are the most vulnerable in a health crisis. But, you know, we've kept them for phase two. But what do you think, you know, do you think it's taught us at all that we should put their needs first?
Yeah, I think in when we talk about vaccinations and trying to protecting the older people, especially in times of crisis or pandemic, we should be putting them first. I mean, putting them ahead, because like in our own vaccination phase, they are in the second phase, right? So, and I guess now the thing is to actually making sure that they get the vaccination, right? So things like making the vaccinations easy to them, so that they don't have to come all the way. I mean, we've heard stories that people walked. I think over the weekend, there was a story that an older person actually walked about 3 kilometers just to get her vaccination. So things like that, I think we need to be more, the services have to be more easier for them to receive, rather than, making sure that everyone sort of get the same treatment kind of thing.
Yeah. To me, it's a disconnect. We talk about filial piety, we talk about respect, we talk about values, but at the same time, somebody has to walk 3 kilometers just to get vaccinated. It doesn't make sense, in my mind at least. It's we need to relook how we treat our older people, honestly. So we'll come back and have this discussion. If you have a question about how we can protect our older adults better, give us a call. It's 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back to Health and Living. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. Prof. Zamri Sakawi, Chairman of the Malaysian Influenza Working Group and Professor in Medical Microbiology at University Putra Malaysia, and Dr. Noura Nakia Hairi, Professor of Epidemiology and Public Health from University of Malaya, joining me to chat about, as Malaysia ages, how do we protect our older adults? And this conversation is brought to you by Immunize for Life with their campaign, Flu Prevention is an Act of Love, which has the theme, Come Out Stronger, Protect Them Better. We were talking about how Malaysia will be an aging nation, which means that, you know, by the year 2030, 15% of our population will be above the age of 65. And I've had these conversations over the last 12 years about us being an aging nation. At that time, in the early years, but 10, 12 years ago, it was 2035. Today, it's 2030. Is that even going to change, in the next couple of years? Probably getting faster and closer to us. And I've always wondered why we are so absolutely cool about it. You know, we're moving at snail's pace, knowing that our population is aging. And we have countries who are already an aged population, Japan, for an example. And we can just copy and just, you know, deal with this situation. But our priorities are very, very different at the moment, I feel at least. So I'm just wondering, do you think this much of this is going to change, Professor Zamri? Because let's, you know, even if you're not talking about influenza, learning about COVID vaccination programs, how do we sort of ensure that the older person is vaccinated against other diseases like influenza and shingles? Where do we even start? Because you did speak about how the children play a role and there is hesitancy amongst the older people. How do you think we can change that mindset?
Yeah, it's really a challenge. Even though that now that we realize that there's awareness about COVID vaccines, but then we're talking about immunization in general. There is sort of like, you know, it's more like a perceived risk by the individuals. You know, if they don't see that that disease is threatening them, I'm sure that they would not get themselves vaccinated. So that's why that we have to play a role as a doctor, that the doctor themselves, the GPs, the primary care physicians need to really advocate vaccines and recommend vaccines to their patients or to their whoever in the neighborhood. That is what is a bit lacking at the moment. And that's why my society, the Malaysian Influenza Working Group, as well as Immunize for Life, like to educate our own doctors to actually advocate these vaccines. Like you mentioned, shingles vaccine is a good vaccine, and it really prevents shingles. You know, if you get shingles, you get a hell of your life.
Yeah, and it's really especially painful. When you're older, right? You get shingles when you're older, yeah.
Yes, and even influenza and pneumococcal. So this kind of things was not really being discussed during their annual sessions with their GPs. And my society, Malaysian Society of Infectious Diseases and Chemotherapy, has already come up with an adult immunization guidelines, which is very useful for our doctors to really just flip easy to use guideline for them to just flip through and then recommend these kind of vaccines for certain groups of people.
How do other countries approach this?
Other countries is a bit different because, for example, influenza vaccines are already included in the health financing system. So it's not a problem because the doctors recommend and then they can get reimbursement in terms of financial reimbursement. So in that sense, there's a government support system. Over here, we are trying to get our own government to support the system. Because if it's in the government system, they expect it to be kind of like there's some financial support there. But at the moment, it's not. But I'm happy, quite happy this year because it was announced in the budget that we can go for vaccination and then we can get our tax reduction. Reduction, so tax reduction up to 1,000 ringgit for the vaccines.
All vaccines or just certain vaccines?
For adults vaccines, basically. Okay. And this is good, actually. It's a good start. That is the way that we should view vaccines, you know. It's more of like prevention of infectious diseases. And we can say that it's also kind of like a healthy lifestyle, you know? In addition to being active and then eating healthily. So getting ourselves protected against infectious diseases is one of the things that we need to do.
Okay.
That you have a healthy.
Yeah. So I think the other thing we need to recognize is the healthier the older person, the less of an impact or the less the problems or the demands on our resources, right? What is the impact on our healthcare system and how do we reduce that impact? I mean, we're going to have vaccine hesitancy all the time, right? We don't see older people don't hear much about people dying from influenza, for an example. I'm probably not going to get it is the perception, right? But how do we reduce that impact on the healthcare system? Do we make it mandatory? It's legislation in some countries. It is legislated in some countries. You have to take the influenza vaccine. How do we, I mean, do you think that we need to go down that path at all, Prof. Zamri?
Well, to get it mandated or make it compulsory is not a good thing to do. You know, in the long run, it may backfire and get a lot of litigations, you know. So it's not a good thing. The best is probably, you know, we did studies on all this, looking into vaccine hesitancy. So it's more like we need to really educate this particular group. You need to identify who are the groups that are having this vaccine hesitancy and why, what are their concerns. And the best people to look at it is actually doctors. So every opportunity that every visit to a primary care physician or to a GP, that's where that we can discuss you know, the role of vaccines and things like that. And as well as NGO like ourselves and many other NGOs can address this. Well, for adult immunization, it's more like the risk, a perceived risk, is a bit inappropriate, I would say, because they don't view that certain diseases are a threat to them. It's just like buying insurance, you know, you don't know, yes, when it's going to be useful. So
especially when you're young, you're young, nothing's going to happen to you, right?
Yes.
<You're> always,
nah. So that's really a challenge. I wouldn't say that it is kind of like serious vaccine hesitancy that you find in child immunization, but it's more like trying to convince them, okay, if you have this when you are at old age, then you have really a big problem.
Do you think, as the influenza working group, do you think you've moved the needle at all when it comes to adult vaccinations?
Yes, we did. Now we're getting, we have a lot of activities, social media activities, and then this is one of the talk shows, is one of our regular thing that we do, trying to give a lot of education to listeners, as well as, you know, even though listeners may have parents, and then to get them to really get their parents to be vaccinated and protected.
Okay. We had the National Health and Morbidity Survey on the elderly health in 2018. What were the key findings, Dr. Noran, from that survey? And where were some of the identified priority areas? Would you know?
Yeah. Maybe just to add on to what Prof. Zamri was mentioning just now, one of the things that Malaysians are very familiar with is the childhood vaccination program.
Yes.
So that when you deliver and you have a child, and then the child goes for their vaccination program, so you kind of know that, okay, the next month he or she has to go to the clinic kesehatan or the GPs, and then when they go to school, and then they've got the vaccination in school or the immunization program in school. But I think one of the things that Malaysia needs to be a little bit more aware of is the adulthood vaccination program as well, and it does exist. And I think maybe some of us don't really, are not really quite aware that there are some, there are these things called the adult vaccination program. But I suppose one of the things that COVID actually showed us that vaccination is also needed for all age groups. So maybe this is something that a start that we can, you know, promote a bit more on the adult vaccination program.
Yeah. Maybe we should have that card that when you hit 65, you need to tick those boxes, you know, every year. This is your vaccination schedule, immunization schedule. Did we identify priority areas in the National Health and Morbidity Survey?
Okay, let's just look at some of the results of the National Health Mobility Survey 2018. So this is the first ever survey that Malaysia has on the health status of older persons. So we've never had it before. So basically, when you talk about diseases, right, when you talk about older person's health status, the non-communicable disease, 30%, almost 1 in 3 have diabetes mellitus, 50%, that's 1 in 2, have hypertension. This is among older people aged 60 years and above. 40% have high lipid or high cholesterol. And then you talked about fall. So 1 in 7 actually experienced an episode of fall in the last 1 year. And majority actually fell once. And 50% out of them actually need hospital care, either inpatient or outpatient. Looking at malnutrition, obesity, 20% or 1 in 5 are actually obese and overweight. undernourished about 5%, and 10% have issues of muscle wasting or sarcopenia. Talking about frailty, almost 1 in 10 are frail, and prevalence seem to increase every 10 years of age. So the older you are, the higher prevalence of you becoming frail. And you're talking about, so 1 in 10 or about 10% have experienced some form of depressive symptomology. Dementia is also about 8% or 1 in 10. Functional capacity, basic self-care, activities of daily living, 1 in 6 are unable to do by themselves. Independent activities of daily living, so that's IDL, 1 in 2 are unable to do by themselves. So these are some of the focus or some of the results from the National Health Mobility Survey in 2018. So a lot of it are actually focused on non-communicable disease or in fact lifestyle or sedentary lifestyle issues. That's some of the findings of National Health Mobility Survey.
That's a lot to look at. Where do you start? And how do we compare to, you know, a country that's maybe, you know, the same level as Malaysia? Would you have a comparison, country to compare with?
I suppose some of the figures are slightly or more in our country as compared to others. We know for sure diabetes mellitus, for example, non-communicable disease or issues of sedentary lifestyle, overweight and obesity, our numbers have not been very good. We seem to be high in that list across all age groups. So this is something that I think we have to really focus on, because overweight and obesity is an issue. In fact, looking at COVID right now, some of the death or mortality among COVID patients occurs among the younger age group. They're not the older people, but they have issues like obesity or overweight. So that's quite, if you look at DG's report every day, right? So you can see those in the 20s and 30s age group are also do experience death, and they would have issues like overweight and obesity. So these are some of the things that I think when you compare to other countries, we have issues on overweight, obesity, as well as diabetes like this.
Okay, so those would be some of the priorities that we need to look at. But, you know, I'm just surprised that this is the first report that we've ever done.
We've had small studies or surveys, but National Health Mobility Surveys, NHMS, actually started way back in the 1986. And every 10 years up to 2006, but after that, it went on to every 5 years. But what happened is that it looks at adults or age 18 years and above. So we do have some numbers where it talks about older people, but specifically on elderly. So this is the first one that we've had. And we're going to have it every 5 years. So that's something good that we're looking forward to the numbers.
Okay. Prof. Zamri.
Yeah, you know, looking at this data, you know, it highlights to us that, a quite significant number of these older persons have comorbidities like diabetes and hypertension and chronic diseases. So this is really worrying. And that's why the role of vaccination is even more important, right, you know, to get them to be vaccinated and protected against influenza, for example. Because we know that if this happen in older persons and with comorbidities, then the outcome is even more worse.
Yeah, it's the same with COVID, isn't it? The comorbidities is very high amongst the death rate, especially for COVID. But this lack of data, what does it tell you, Dr. Noran? You know, we are horrible with data because it's a nightmare for our work. We don't know where to look for it. The National Health and Mobility Survey is a lifesaver. You know, it gives us an idea of the state of health in the country. But when you look at specific groups, there's very little data. But what is the problem with this lack of data? How do we plan for the older person if we don't have data?
Data is very important. I think data is something that we need. We would like to analyze the trends of the data, mainly for policy making as well as the first part of it is actually to generate, to see what is the size of the problem. Unless we have the data, we won't know whether we have the certain diseases, and we'll be just, you know, having enough rough idea of what we see in the population. But estimating the size of a health problem is very important. And this is where we need the data. We need to know where the illness is, looking at the geographical area. So does it happen in certain population, or is it just among all population? Of course, when it talk about infectious diseases, even more important, we need to detect the outbreak before it goes out of proportion. So that's some of the things that we have to have data. And when it talks about data, I think, in general, we have other forms of data, things like the surveillance data or the registries. So we have quite a bit of surveillance data. I think some that comes in mind are our non-communicable disease surveillance, the renal registry, for example. We've got the diabetes registry. So these are important data, important registries that we can have a look and see whether our management of diabetes, for example, has it improved, or is it static? Or, you know, some of the things that I can quote from this diabetes registry is at the level of the HbA1c that those with diabetes have, you know, whether they're good in the sense of their management, and we tend to see improvement in the quality of diabetes care from this National Diabetes Registry, so that's good. But of course, there are other issues as well. We seem to see that the older people are managed well, better than the younger population. So the younger people are not having very good results when it comes to their diabetes management. So these are some of the things that we actually found from the surveillance data that we have.
Okay, so they're doing better because they're more compliant. They're listening to the doctor, the young people, the younger person is not. you know, I've always thought that, you know, with COVID in the last many months since March, I've never been privy to so much information, nationwide information. It helps you understand behavior in different states, for an example, right? And if only we had more of that, it will help us come up with targeted plans for our older person, not just the older person, for everybody in general who is affected by health issues. But we'll come back and answer more of some of your questions about tech. We know the older person has been left out in a big way because of this digital gap with this vaccination rollout. I also want to find out more about mental health issues, and that's coming up next. If you have a question on how we can better protect the older adults, give us a call. It's 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018 789 8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment, and today's show is brought to you by Immunize for Life with their campaign Flu Prevention is an Act of Love, which has the theme Come Out Stronger, Protect Them Better. Joining me, Professor Zamri Sakawi, Chairman of the Malaysian Influenza Working Group and Professor in Medical Microbiology, University Putra, Malaysia, and Dr. Nora Nakia Hairi, Professor of Epidemiology and Public Health at University of Malaya. We're discussing how we can protect our older adults better. I think we've covered quite a lot of ground. But the most important thing that's come through just now when you mentioned Dr. Noran is that the older population is not a homogenous group. And we need to remember that. They come in, you know, many, many shapes and sizes, in character, in fitness level, in health status and all of that. So it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of a thing, right? And what I wanted to ask you is, you know, we saw the technology gap with the rollout of the vaccines. It's a major issue, but does this mean we're not ready to use tech in healthcare or even security for the elderly, Dr. Noran?
It's something that's going to be with us, right? It's something, it's no longer the future, it's already here. Yeah. So things like smartphones, getting yourselves connected to the internet, the computers. So these are things that it's something that it's going to be a norm for the way of life. So I suppose when it talked about whether older people are ready or to use tech in healthcare or social security, It depends on two things. One is the technological knowledge, as well as the other one is the acceptance. So if you can have both these dimensions, agreeable to the older people, then I think there is a way forward. We should be using technology in all the ways that we can. And I suppose the digital illiteracy is the one that's most relevant reason why older people are not using or are having this, the digital divide. So some solutions I would think of would be training. I think the children themselves, they would have to, simple things like using the smartphones or helping their parents to look on the My Sejahtera for the vaccination for COVID. Those things are things that the children themselves can help the older people, and they can then check whether they've got their appointment, and as long as you teach them, you get them to use the smartphones.
So I think that's where we make this assumption that children will help. Right. Let's make this assumption that our children will not help. Society is changing. We have more and more older people who are on their own. So how do we help that group of people? And we can see that happening right before our eyes when it comes to the COVID vaccinations.
So I suppose besides the children, there's always this peer learning and peer training. So peers is actually a very strong peer learning or peer training is actually a very promising tool for education. In fact, I remembered when we were young in school, as teenagers, when we hear things that the teachers tell us, we won't listen to them. But when we hear things that our peers tells us, it's much easier to accept. So again, the issue about peer-to-peer or peer learning or peer training is something that if the children are unable to help, then the older people who have the knowledge and who are very techno-savvy, like we said just now, some of them are even better than us, right? So say they know more. So these are some of the things that I suppose in terms of training and getting the older people to use technology should be the way forward.
I think we need to find a way of penetrating their WhatsApp networks because it's so powerful. It's unbelievable. I mean, we can just find a way of doing it. We just are unable to. And, Professor Tan Maupin is the one who brought some understanding for us because a lot of us, struggle with our parents reading, fake news on WhatsApp and misleading news on WhatsApp. And she explained to us that you have to understand the reason they do that is because they believe whatever's on a screen. They grew up in a generation where whatever that came on a screen is the truth. And so when they look at their phones, it's the truth. So I think that we need to find a way of getting into that network somehow. But do you think they're able to navigate the healthcare system? I mean, we have a pretty strong healthcare service for the older people. But is it accessible? And how do we make that better?
I think when it comes to healthcare system, it's available. That's one thing for sure. We have this dual healthcare system. So we've got the private and the public healthcare system. So with regards to the public healthcare system, there is always a healthcare facility at every 5 kilometers. So the availability is always there. I guess the question is whether it's accessible to them. So that's and navigating the healthcare system can be difficult. So this is where I suppose others can help in. So if you have groups like the caregivers, especially the younger caregivers, so they can, they can be those who actually help the older people navigate through our healthcare system.
Okay. Immediately, what would be a solution in your mind, Dr. Noran, to help the older person, age well and, with proper access to the healthcare system?
I suppose we have to make it a bit more friendly, our healthcare system, right? So that's one thing for sure.
I think society. I think that rests with society, not really the healthcare system.
Yeah, I suppose the community helps, and society needs to be more aware of these issues, and all of us need to jump in. It's more of everyone's responsibility.
Okay, would you have a message for us, Professor Zamri?
Yeah, the gap in technology among these older persons is actually to me, nothing new. So I also observed that, you know, people like in the rurals of Sabah and Sarawak, you know, they're really, I can say, totally cut off from what's happening. And that's where I see that the role of government also plays a very important role in getting maybe the vaccines up to the doorsteps. And don't worry about getting them registered first. You know, give the vaccines first, and then only then you settle up the technical part. So that will, you know, get them into the... So that's also applicable to certain other diseases as well. When they do their checking for maybe blood sugars or what hypertension or blood pressures, things like that, you know, you have the government needs to go to the rural areas and then get them in touch with the what's latest thing about health, how to take care of themselves and things like that. So it's more of like public health get into the community rather than, of course, technology plays a very important role in health, actually.
Yeah.
And I foresee that my generation, we get older, you know, by the years, and then I think the technological gap would be decreased.
Reduced.
So we'll reduce. And I think till then, we still need to do some of the traditional way or the, you know, unconventional way to get them.
Yep. I was just doing the math. I won't be 65 yet in 9 years' time. So hopefully our generation that's more exposed will be the ones there. And we will, you know, I hate to think about how more advanced it would be, right? And we'll have to catch up. Probably be an entirely different world. But thank you both very much for joining me today. Professor Zamri Sakawi, Chairman of the Malaysian Influenza Working Group and Professor in Medical Microbiology of University Putra Malaysia. And Dr. Nora Nakia Hairi, Professor of Epidemiology and Public Health, University of Malaya, speaking to us about, as Malaysia ages, how do we protect our older adults? This conversation is brought to you by Immunize for Life with their campaign, Flu Prevention is an Act of Love, which has the theme, Come Out Stronger, Protect Them Better. For more information, do visit actoflove.ifl.my to find out more. This is Health and Living on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.